And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. How are you, Ted?
Oh, just dandy, just dandy. So, Mariah, it turns out that over the last decade or so, there's been a lot of effort put into closing down coal plants across the country. Right? It's a big effort because coal plants are very, very dirty. Carbon dioxide producing places. And I think there's only one left here in New England at Bow. Certainly all the ones in Massachusetts have been shut down. It turns out that on average, a coal plant kicks out around 2 megatons of carbon dioxide, 2 million tons of carbon dioxide a year. Fine. In parallel with that, and with the decline of the coal plants, the country's been producing more and more methane through fracking methods, right? We've talked endlessly about fracking and methane and how bad it is. Methane is a particularly potent greenhouse gas, 86 times more worse than CO2 for various reasons, but methane's cheap and plentiful. In my humble opinion, I don't know if I'm correct, but I think that the industry can see that the market for methane is moving away from heating people's homes and generating electricity. That the that with the cheap solar panels and whatnot, the industry sees in 10 years it's not going to have a market to sell us methane to. And so they cleverly have decided to repurpose their refineries to take the methane gas and process it into stuff that they make plastic with. Okay, these are called the precursors for plastic production. They generate this stuff. And of course, all these refineries taking in methane and producing gas, producing these plastic stuff, feedstocks, generates tons of tons of greenhouse gases. And the funny part is that these greenhouse gases that are produced have really funny names, ethane, butane, you know, all of the sort of names you might remember from organic chemistry class, right? All these different kinds of chemicals. Turns out that it's possible to equate the global warming effect of all these funky chemicals to carbon dioxide. For example, we say methane is 86 times more powerful than CO2. Same way, some of these butadiene, protein, et cetera, these gases are thousands of times more potent than carbon dioxide. So it turns out that making plastic, which is sort of this new idea that the fossil fuel industry has to become big in plastic, is a huge greenhouse gas generator, right? From manufacturing to the disposal. So, Mariah, what I thought was today we needed to go find an expert to tell us this story in more detail and cover it more clearly than I have in this little thumbnail. And so we are thrilled to be joined by Alexis Goldsmith, who's the National Organizing Director for a nonprofit called Beyond Plastic, centered up in Vermont. How you doing, Alexis?
I'm doing well, Ted. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. So you heard the little story I just told about plastics and carbon dioxide and all kinds of stuff. Did I get that right or did I get it wrong? Can you tell me what's the story? What should people know about the relationship between plastics and climate change?
Sure. Well, methane is referred to by the gas industry as natural gas. And as you said, it's what we use to heat our homes. But increasingly, we are moving away from fossil fuels for heating and electricity. So methane is produced through the process of hydraulic fracturing, which is where the gas company will drill a very deep well into the bedrock formations, the shale formations that are deep underground. They pump millions of gallons of water mixed with chemicals deep underground and sand to fracture the bedrock, and then the sand holds it open, and then from there they extract the natural gas. Now, what comes out of that well is a mixture of the water laced with chemicals, sand, salt, and naturally occurring radioactive materials, including radon and radionuclides, and natural gases, which include methane, ethane, propane, and butane. So that slurry goes to a refinery a gas processing plant where they are processed to separate the various proponents, the methane, ethane, butane, and propane, and the fracking wastewater, which is radioactive. And then, so the methane is the natural gas that we're familiar with, but the ethane is has previously been flared off or burned off, but the fossil fuel industry actually can now capture ethane to turn it into plastics. So the majority of plastics in the United States these days is produced from ethane, but it can also be produced from oil and other natural gas liquids.
Really? So tell me, how do you quantify the impact, the climate change impact of this process of extraction and processing of these gases?
Well, our report, The New Coal, Plastics and Climate Change, which is available on our website, beyondplastics.org, looks at self-reported data from the industry to the EPA. And so this is publicly available data, and we look at the impacts of the processing itself and the supply chain of plastics, but also the impacts of methane leakage, where throughout the supply chain, methane leaks into the atmosphere, which, as you pointed out, methane is a much more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. The methane impacts of plastic alone, our report estimates at about the equivalent of 18 average-sized 500-megawatt coal-fired power plants in 2020. And by 2025, that impact is expected to increase to the average of 21 coal-fired power plants or 42 million tons of carbon dioxide equivalent.
So Alexis, let me just, I think this is a fascinating point that people, the place that people want to hang their hat is to say, we know how much carbon dioxide comes out of an average coal plant, and we all hate the coal plant. We want to shut those coal plants down, right? Mm-hmm. So once you get this sort of baseline unit in your head of how much carbon dioxide comes out of a coal plant, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, the report says, okay, that's the measure we're going to use. And now mm-hmm. all these other funky gases that come off of the refining process have equivalents to CO2 that the scientists can figure out. And you end up saying that, boy, that refinery over there looks like a coal plant, and we should think of it that way. Is that fair to say?
Well, we use the comparison to coal plants because coal has been a major target for decarbonization. Just, you know, this past week at the UN Climate Conference in Glasgow, Scotland, dozens of nations pledged to eliminate coal-fired power by 2040. Something that Beyond Plastics really focuses on is the upstream impacts of plastic production that don't get talked about a lot. So plastic has a major impact on our atmosphere, on our water, on our air quality. And we thought that comparing it to coal plants would really help to drive that message home. And what we found, which surprised even us as we were producing this report, was that the impacts of plastic production in the United States, if they expand as they are currently expected to without regulatory intervention, they will outpace coal emissions by 2030 in the U.S.
Wow. That's interesting. I mean, Alexis, I looked up in Wikipedia, some simple search said that there were 241 coal plants currently operating in the United States, right? At an average of 500, you know, megawatts a year. And you're saying is that if there's 241, we're going to add another 20, 30, 40 equivalent coal plants. We're going to build, it's like building 40 new coal plants, which is just a horrible image for people to carry around, right?
Right. Well, plastics in the U.S. already account, in 2020, plastics in the U.S. accounted for the equivalent of 116 coal-fired power plants. By 2025, it will grow to more than 150 coal-fired power plants from plastic production. So this is increasing at a rate of about 10 new coal-fired power plants a year just from plastic production. And this is largely happening under the radar. Now, that's just by 2025. Plastic production in the U.S., if industry had its way, because we have an abundance of shale gas in this country, plastic production would quadruple in the U.S. by 2050. And we're currently producing 46 million tons of virgin plastic annually. Take that times four. If this is allowed to happen, if these facilities are built, if this infrastructure is built, quite simply, it will threaten our ability to remain below that 1.5 degree Celsius rise in temperature, which we must keep to avoid the worst, the most catastrophic impacts of climate change.
So Alexis, one thing I want to go back to is you said that the numbers, some of these numbers you're reporting, that they were self-reported. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I read in the report is that there's a belief that it's not actually accurately reflecting what's really happening because of this self-reporting, and that some of the research has indicated that it's actually maybe even double what's being released. Can you sort of clarify how that fits in with the picture and the numbers you've been speaking of?
Right. Well, as I said, we drew our numbers from self-reported data. We didn't want to put out any data that industry could say this is wrong or attack us for any reason. But we do know that because it's self-reported, the EPA requires emission reports only from certain industries and from certain facilities, not all of them. And they only require reports on certain emissions, but not all emissions. So it's fair to assume that there are a lot of emissions that are not being accounted for in this plastic supply chain. And we need to sound the alarm on the impacts of plastic on our climate.
I think that's a great point, because it's, you know, I think if you were to ask someone who's sort of aware of climate change and is, you know, concerned about keeping it below 1.5 and so on and so forth, coal would be an easy, like, okay, we've got to shut down coal plants. But if you were to say plastics are maybe even a bigger problem, that's further from the sort of reality for a lot of people, myself included. I mean, I'm certainly one who tries to eliminate plastics from my life, but I had no idea that they were having such an impact.
It's true. This has largely happened under the radar. And a part of that is because this infrastructure is so concentrated in just a small number of communities. A lot of people don't see where their plastic comes from or where it goes after you throw it away. So those are really hidden impacts that people just aren't aware of. And we need more education on this. We need to talk about this more, and we need to brief basically our representatives on what an expansion of petrochemical infrastructure means for the future.
So, Alexis, one of the sections of the report talks about recycling and the disposal of plastic, and I've been following this a little bit, and I find it mind-numbing. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but that very little of the plastic that is produced is actually recycled in any form, and that the nice little labels that go on your containers that have numbers 1 through, God knows, 10 or 11, right? They mean nothing, right? And that generally speaking, the industry claims to be doing some kind of recycling under funny names, but basically it's a scam, mm-hmm. right? Can you mm-hmm. explain that?
Yeah. So our report talks about something called chemical recycling, which has a lot of different names. It can be called pyrolysis, solvolysis, methanolysis, lots of things that end in cis. It can be waste to energy or waste to fuel. And chemical recycling is kind of this rebranding of the promise of recycling, which was a major campaign by Big Plastic in the 80s when people started seeing plastic litter showing up in their environment, and the industry was under, you know, big consumer brands were under fire to do something about it, like Coca-Cola, Nestle, Pepsi. So they pushed recycling as the solution. And what ended up happening was unbeknownst to consumers, most of our recycling was actually being shipped overseas to Southeast Asia, China, and Western Africa, where it ended up as pollution and ocean pollution. But now we are coming to terms with the fact that less than 9% of plastics are recycled. So the industry is rebranding recycling. But these chemical recycling promises are really false promises. It's not recycling. It's actually just turning plastic into fuel, back into fossil fuels to be burned. And sometimes it's really just burning straight plastic. So there's no recycling happening. And of course, this is a major greenhouse gas emitter. For every 1 pound of plastic that gets processed by so-called chemical recycling, and I hate to even call it recycling, you emit, or the industry emits, 3 pounds of greenhouse gases. So that's on top of the greenhouse gases that were emitted to produce the plastic in the first place.
Wow, that's, go ahead, Mariah.
This is just to decide, but what about things like, you know, you hear about like chinchilla fleece by Patagonia that's made out of a plastic bottle. I mean, mm-hmm. How does that fit into the picture?
Well, that's one of the common methods of recycling. So your plastic bottles and your fleeces, that falls into that category of the 8.5% of plastic getting recycled. But it is really just a delay for the plastic to wind up in a landfill or in it as pollution. And even as you're wearing it, I'm really sorry to say it's generating microplastic pollution in your washing machine. So there's no good solution. And we, at Beyond Plastics, we really try to focus on the upstream impacts. You wouldn't try, if your bathtub was overflowing, you wouldn't grab a mop, you would turn off the tap first. And we really, really just need to sound the alarm again on the expansion of plastic infrastructure in the United States. We're talking about the ethane gas crackers, which are facilities that process ethane gas into plastic nurdles and plastic bags and artificial turf and tires. We're talking about rail lines just to serve ethane crackers, pipelines. The United States has almost 3 million miles of oil and gas pipelines, and more are still being built, and they're being built to service plastics. We're talking about injection wells where the wastewater is stored, where the ethane is stored, rail cars, exports, giant ships that export compressed, highly pressurized natural gas overseas to be made into plastics. I mean, it's really not just the fracking well. It's a whole suite of infrastructure, polluting infrastructure that leaks methane everywhere. And just to make plastic that winds up as pollution in the environment or the air.
So, Alexis, I think that's actually, I take your point that focusing on the upstream part, basically where the plastic's coming from, is the place to apply pressure. I guess one question is, does the report go and make suggestions as to like what can be done? I mean, because you're right, stopping the construction of an ethane plant mm-hmm. in Indiana or maybe in Cancer Alley in Louisiana, right? I mean, that's mm-hmm. How would you go about that? Is there something that people listening to the show can, other than educating themselves, is there something that people can do, or what's the plan?
Yeah, there is a national movement. Well, it's an international movement called Break Free from Plastic, but there's a Break Free from Plastic US that is calling on congressional representatives, Senate representatives, and President Biden to stop the build out of petrochemical infrastructure in the United States. Just last week, there was a national action where communities from Texas, Louisiana, Ohio, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, California, DC, all over the country came together on Zoom to call on President Biden to put an immediate moratorium on new permits, new federal permits for plastic facilities. And one that really stuck out to me was a group of people standing in front of the Shell ethane cracker in Monica, Pennsylvania, which is currently under construction. It's undergone a lot of delays. It's the first ethane cracker in that region. And the people there, they were dressed up as like babies and Mr. Rogers and mothers, and they were being chased around by an oil executive who was trying to force feed them plastic from a plastic pie. And it really just, the imagery jumped out at me because consumers don't want more plastic. This is not, the increase in plastic in our daily lives is not happening because of demand, like the oil and gas industry wants you to think. It's happening because of production. And I would tell your listeners, there is a federal bill called the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act of 2021. It currently has more than 100 co-sponsors in the House. You should look that up, see if your representatives are a co-sponsor of that bill. And if they're not, I recommend reaching out to them and asking for a constituent meeting. Educate your representatives on this issue. Brief them on Beyond Plastics report on the new coal. Brief them on the impacts of plastic production and the expansion of plastic production. Something the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act does is puts a moratorium on federal permits for new and expanded plastic manufacturing facilities. So we have the legislation to do it. All that is needed is the political will. So we need people to be engaged on this. We need people who are working on climate to be engaged on plastics as well.
So Alexis, let me restate and reiterate just what you said. I think is very true, and I think it's a very important point, because people say, oh yeah, I need plastic. I need my toothbrush. I need my Bic pen, right? I need that bag. And what you're, the case you would make is that the increasing production of plastic is driven because the industry wants to sell this stuff, not because people are demanding more plastic bags and more, you know, more plastic stuff, right? Is that, that's fair, right?
Yeah. Yes. And that's not just me saying that. There was a 2019 study from what's called Shelton Group. And the study is called Waking the Sleeping Giant. And they interviewed more than 1,000 American consumers and found that a third of them actively avoid plastic and buying things that are packaged in plastic. And those people that are avoiding the plastic, a good percentage of them are willing to buy the product that is not packaged in plastic, regardless of the price or the quality. So this is really, this comes to the fact that this is an economic equality issue as well. People want to go zero waste, but a lot of people can't afford it because, the zero waste item might be more expensive. Mm-hmm. So I think it's fair to say American consumers don't want more plastic. We want less plastic in our trash, but we're being force fed by that oil executive, that gas executive from the plastic pie.
That is a really heartening point. I mean, if we estimate of 30% of the people are like me, I mean, every time I look at one of these, fishing net bags, your oranges come in, you say, oh my God, that's going to hurt somebody somewhere downstream. I don't want to buy that. Right. And so, the way to end that is to go upstream and have this, the Break Free from Plastics Act. Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow.
Yep. The Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act.
Break free. Okay, we're going to put a link in. We'll put a link in the show notes about that and all this other stuff. We'll have the report. Alexis, tell me again, how can people find the report besides going to the MCAM blog and getting the link? Say again what the link is.
Yeah, it's beyondplastics.org/plastics-and-climate.
Super, 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 super. That's great. So we'll put those links up. If you have any questions about this podcast, suggestions of what shows we ought to be talking, what we ought to be talking about, please let us know. Send an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. You're probably listening to this on your smartphone, which has some plastic in it, I would wager. But you're listening to it on your smartphone using one of the modern podcast distribution apps. Please ask all of your friends to listen to us on their favorite modern podcast distribution app. We want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that reflects environmental justice, that respects environmental justice communities. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here today.
Always a pleasure.
And Alexis, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. It's been fascinating, really insightful. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks you, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.